is living in a cheap hotel.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. What's led to this Friday morning? Essential Technologies text line. Time permitting, I will try to get to them, but feel free to give it a shot. 251-343-0106. Lee says train travel would be so much better, so much more interesting if I had an open bar and poker room like the old days. I don't know, Lee, did they have were you old enough for the old poker room? Now, they do have a bar car, but be prepared to pay a handsome sum for your your Miller Lite tall boy. Be prepared, like a $12 beer. So depending on your tolerance to get it going, you may be forking over $100 or so. Anyway, enough of that nostalgia. Joining us now on the line, he is our returning champion. And the way we end the week typically is with State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you? Oh, do we have you here? We lost the senator. We will try to reconnect. But anyway, hammering the passenger rail as much as we can here. So I hope I haven't upset too many of you on this topic. But like I said, I have experienced this, and I am just passing on my experiences to you so you don't make the same mistake. It's all in good faith. It's not like I am a malicious Amtrak hater. Well, let's see if we got him now. Senator Elliott, are you back with us?
Back with you. Technical difficulty. Sorry about that.
Live radio. It happens from time to time. You've been a busy man these last couple of weeks, speaking around the state, getting around the state, which is something you got to do from time to time in your position, I would think. But what are you learning out there?
Well, I've been talking with municipal leaders and county leaders around the state, really from Athens to Tuscaloosa and Anniston to, you know, Birmingham and Montgomery, and was in Clark County last week some, but, you know, just hearing about what their concerns are and their goals are for the upcoming session, what's going on in the minds of our municipal leaders and our county leaders. A lot of it's, of course, focused on money, on ARPA funding and where that's going and how that's working. And then, of course, on the SSUT and really a push by some Big Ten mayors to really redo the way the simplified seller's use tax, which your listeners will know is kind of the tax you pay on Amazon goods and Wayfair goods and things of that nature.
Tell us something. Getting around, we'll get to the SSUT in a moment, but getting around the state, something you're familiar with, rural broadband. I gotta think some of these. Rural counties, county commissioners, some of these municipal leaders, city councils, and mayors. How excited are they for rural broadband? And should maybe we look at a Starlink? Because I know this has been something you've talked a lot about, at least on social media.
Yeah, it is. It's something that I think needs to be part of the mix. And what I've heard from the local elected officials are that they want not just more say, but more input in what projects are done where, as opposed to this kind of the providers themselves applying for the grants and then deciding where they're going to spend that money, and that may not necessarily be the best use of or the best bang for the buck for actually getting folks connected that are currently not connected. You know, the Starlink option, I think, really does need to be part of the mix, especially for rural Alabama, because the cost for the service to get the infrastructure, if you will, is so inexpensive compared to what we're seeing in some of the grants that have been provided already. I mean, I've seen figures when you do the quick math about, you know, how many millions of dollars have been granted and then how many homes have been connected in a particular area. You're starting to look at costs that are $4,000 or $5,000 per connection to a home, which is not what Starlink costs. You know, Starlink, your upfront costs are $500 or $600. I think it's $550 for the equipment, and then you have a monthly service. But it requires absolutely no additional infrastructure. And I'm just worried that in some of these, especially more rural areas, you have the need for internet, of course, but we don't need to look at this the way we look at running power back in the FDR TVA days. You know, we need to look at technology moving pretty quickly and how can we serve these areas quickly, but without the large upfront costs we're seeing with traditional broadband.
Well, every time I read a press release or something, and there's it's a good chance it's going to be touting rural broadband and what the state. I mean, I from your perspective, how much progress is actually being made there? Because it seems like we've been talking about this for about a decade now in this state.
I think there's some significant progress being made. I'm really concerned about the efficiency of the use of these dollars. You know, again, if you're running fiber down a street that's got some density on it, then your cost per household is going to be a lot less, and that's good use of dollars, and fiber works there, and that's all well and good. But if you're trying to use the same solution in some of the most rural parts of Alabama, then the cost per home is going to be extravagant, and there may be a much better way to do that, a much cheaper way to do that. And, you know, technology is just changing at such a rate, and government typically is pretty poor at being innovative and nimble. I worry that we're being inefficient with the use of funds, and we could make them go further if we broadened our eyes a little bit. Of course, you know, Starlink doesn't have a lobbyist. You know, Elon Musk or his companies don't have a lobbyist in Montgomery, so they don't necessarily have a seat at the table. But I think that as good stewards of taxpayer money and these dollars, we need to make them go just as far as we possibly can.
Well, isn't this though that Starlink? You look at, for example, COVID relief money, ARPA, and, you know, there's so many strings attached to federal money, as you know, that that form of internet, rural internet, is just not approved under the federal guidelines.
Well, I think it would be. You know, the question is just how do you implement that, right? Do you know, it's easy to say we have put fiber in the ground, we have made this available for folks to connect to it, versus we've provided a box and a satellite dish. And then, of course, you get still into the question of monthly service that has to be paid. And in some of the poor areas where you have, you know, folks that from a socioeconomic standpoint are challenged, are they able to afford the monthly fee? Now, of course, you know, I think if you get into some of these higher speed broadbands, you're paying $100 a month or so for high speed, significantly high speed cable or something like that, and that's comparable to what you're seeing with broadband, with Starlink. But your point's well taken. It's just non-traditional when you look at simply providing $500 worth of equipment to an individual and saying, here it is, versus we've laid fiber, we've put infrastructure in the ground. That's just a different thing for legislators and bureaucrats to get their arms around.
I mean, and a lot of your colleagues are really, really big on this. I mean, it's all they want to talk about. Hey, you want to come on radio? We can talk about rural broadband. And I've never met anybody in person that has been the beneficiary of any rural broadband initiative in this state. Now, I may not get out enough, but I do get out. I would say this. I think these guys need to start showing some W's on the scoreboard, right?
No, I think you're right, and of course, you know, that type of infrastructure investment takes time. I mean, you have to physically put it in the ground. You have to have the equipment, materials, and everything else to do that, and to get it hooked up. You know, Starlink has, depending on when, you've got a back order situation or whatever, but once they ship it to you, you plug it in, and it works that day, and it's just that simple. So I think you're right. There's gonna have to be some you know, fidelity in that conversation about, hey, is, you know, can we ship a box to somebody and have them connected that day versus this long, drawn-out infrastructure investment plan with this construction work on the side of the road, as opposed to just flop in a box in a satellite dish that is the size or smaller really than like a cafeteria tray on the side of somebody's house or sitting in their front yard or on, you know, on a pole. It's just really simple. Is that not a more efficient solution? Certainly for rural Alabama, but for areas where, you know, the construction's not feasible or there just isn't the population density.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, I won't belabor this too much, but I do want to know something. Have you ever had the opportunity to travel passenger rail via Amtrak?
Once in the Northeast. Believe it or not, I was leaving Washington and headed up to Philadelphia back in the early days of the I-10 bridge discussion to see a toll bridge across the Delaware River and was able to travel on Amtrak just once.
Any impressions, any takeaways?
Even that Estella train that was supposed to be so fast was not.
And it
took a long time to move along.
I'll leave it there. I'm clicking. So there's a buzz and excitement about passenger rail coming back to Mobile, and I just don't think people know what they're getting into. But like I said, we'll leave it there. Let's move on. I know maybe it feels like we're beating a dead horse, but you were on Sean's show earlier this week, and you know the unfettered release of criminals is the apparently what you're for. By being against the early release of criminals, which seems contradictory, but what do I know? But anyway, that has I think that the governor's comments have kind of upset a lot of people in law enforcement, and not to get Steve Marshall to write an op-ed. Maybe the approach here isn't so much rhetoric, but just an acknowledgement that this isn't going the way it was supposed to, and we can work to improve whatever gripes we have about that 2021 bill.
Well, I think you're right, and I think the comments from the governor's spokesperson are really, you know, kind of turned this entire conversation on its head. I mean, look, I think we can have an honest, calm, rational discussion about the 2021 bill, about the 2015 bill, heck, about our prison problem, on the whole, and how what we're going to do to fix that. And I hope that we see some of that in the upcoming session. You know, I'm surprised, really, that the communications professionals in the governor's office decided, well, if you're not for what we did in 2021, then you're for the unfettered release of criminals. I mean, that's silly. And I hope that rhetoric can calm back down some so that we can get to dealing with some of the big issues we had. You know, you mentioned the Steve Marshall op-ed, which I think was certainly on point. But you also had one by Carla Crowder with the Alabama Appleseed Project, who's got to be the exact opposite, right? If you had the pendulum swung the complete opposite direction. But if you read her op-ed, and I'd encourage your listeners to do so, they talk about letting people out that don't have any support network, that don't have any of the programming that's going to make them not reoffend, we haven't really done anything but made them worse criminals in prison. And she almost argues, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, but she almost argues that letting these people out is a bad idea as well, because they haven't gotten any better in prison. So how is letting them out early a good idea?
I'll tell you, between you and I and everybody listening to this program, Carla Crowder and I will text back and forth sometimes, and we agree on very, very little. But one thing we agree on, and we're in solidarity here, is that the Alabama Department of Corrections is just an agency that is the beleaguered Alabama Department of Corrections. Just needs to be. They need to start all over. It is an abuse of the public trust. It is incompetency reigns supreme there. And here you have right versus left. A right wing nut job Jeff Poore and left wing nut job Carla Crowder united on the Alabama Department of Corrections.
Well, and I think that ought to tell you something, right? I mean, we need to do a top to bottom review. And again, this is the governor's office. This is an executive branch agency. They need to get a hold of this issue and this problem. They need to communicate effectively and work with the legislature to receive, you know, to get the funding that they need. But you've said it and others have, we've provided funding for additional resources or additional resources for prisons. We've provided funding and additional resources for hiring of employees. We've changed bonuses and things like that for corrections officers. If the executive branch needs something else other than letting dangerous criminals back onto the street from the legislature, then I'm all ears. What do you need? Because I think that prisons and keeping people in prison is a hallmark of public safety, and that's something we need to focus on.
Yeah, and we'll kind of wrap it up with this, but it just seems to me these guys, I mean, they tell us this isn't a criteria, but so much of what driving this is trying to get that prison population down, and they're just looking for creative outside-the-box ways of doing so. But what they don't realize, I mean, that stuff comes at a cost.
It absolutely does, and I will tell you that any criminal justice reforms that the focus is reducing overcrowding by letting people out of jail, that's a non-starter for me. The way to solve overcrowding in prisons is to build more prisons, period. Now, if you want to talk about when people get out and whether or not they reoffend and how to deal with recidivism and things like that, that's fine. But never, never, never should letting convicted criminals that still have a sentence to serve and are still dangerous to the public, they should never be let out on the basis of reducing overcrowding.
Senator, got to leave it there, but you're always kind with your time, and have a great weekend.
You do so as well.
All right, that was State Senator Chris Elliott. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
We sing about sweet home and Dixieland delight. We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight. 'Cause Music Row ain't only in Tennessee. So won't you bury me in Dixie?